While Brexit creates many challenges across Europe, the challenges that the island of Ireland face are unique and they're on a totally different scale. And perhaps no part of Europe will be more affected by Brexit than areas such as this, straddling the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland, between Europe and the United Kingdom. It is our objective to ensure that the particular challenges presented by Brexit on this island are fully understood across the European Union. And that's a more difficult task than you may think. For us, Brexit is big news. It's on the front page, it's on the headlines. That's not the case across Europe. People in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania are much more concerned about what's going on in Russia. People in Italy and Spain are much more concerned about what's going on in terms of the migration crisis, what's happening in Catalonia. It is really only us in this part of the world that believe Brexit is the only show in town. And it's an enormous job for us to explain to other people across Europe that this actually is a big deal. So overall, our priorities are clear. We must protect the peace process and ensure that there are no barriers to trade or movement of people across our island. We are absolutely committed to safeguarding the common travel area and the associated rights that are enjoyed by Irish and UK citizens, a commitment that is shared by the UK government and supported by the EU. And I have to say, I dislike the term common travel area. It doesn't really describe what this is. And of course, the common travel area, as we understand it, actually dates back to the 1921 Anglo-Irish Treaty. And at the time, they described it differently. Arthur Griffith, one of the founders of my party, described it as the reciprocity of civic rights. But I think Lloyd George described it better, and he called it a common citizenship. Effectively, the concept that Irish citizens and British citizens in each other's countries are effectively citizens of both, that we can live, work, reside, study, access healthcare, housing, education, welfare, pensions, even vote in elections, as though we were citizens of both, and that's something that I'm determined to retain. Also, as a government, we want to achieve a transitional arrangement or a transitional period. Ironically, although many people haven't recognised this, the Irish government is one of the first people to propose it. And we needed to allow people and business to prepare for any permanent changes that may occur thereafter. We, of course, like everyone here, hopes that the ultimate outcome of the negotiations will be the closest possible trade and customs relationship between the UK and the EU. One that pretty much replicates the situation that we have now. But that isn't something that I can promise. It isn't something that the Irish government can deliver if others don't want it to. So ultimately, if that is not attainable, we will seek a unique solution for Northern Ireland, reflecting its unique history and geography. A solution that doesn't undermine the settled constitutional settlement of the Good Friday Agreement in any way. The Good Friday Agreement was passed in a referendum by 70% of the population here in Northern Ireland, 97% in Ireland. And that's a settlement that should not be changed without a majority and a clear majority who want to change it. I don't think 50% plus one is enough. 97% support in the Republic of Ireland and 70% here should never be undermined by a sectarian headcount. So what we want is a solution that takes account of the realities of this island and builds on our common regulatory approach, framework and systems. Next week, next Thursday to Friday, I'm going to travel to Brussels, where I'll sit around the European Council table with 27 other Prime Ministers. It's a sobering experience. I've been a minister for a number of years before I became Taoiseach, and every meeting I ever attended in Brussels before that was a big meeting in a big room, me sitting beside the ambassador, six officials beside me, interpreters, you name it. When you reach the level of Prime Minister, it's totally different. It's just you in the room. 27 people, no officials. You can send texts, but that's about it. But no officials. And it does become very real, and certainly for a small country, sitting there around the table with Angela Merkel, Emmanuel Macron, others sitting there around the table as equals is an interesting and sober experience and shows the power of the European Union that small countries can sit at the top table as equal to not be told what to do. And the meeting that we have next week is going to be a very interesting one. We'll, of course, deal with normal business. We'll rattle down through the agenda. And then we'll move into something called Article 50 format. And that's the point at which we ask Theresa May to leave. And she will leave. She's required to do so. And having left the 27, we'll then talk about Brexit and what we will do with the United Kingdom, or what type of agreement we might make with them. And it's a sobering experience when that happens, when politely Theresa May is asked to leave and the rest of us talk about the future of Europe and the future of the United Kingdom. So what we'll do is take stock of the negotiations that have happened to date. It seems likely that the decisions on whether sufficient progress has been made on those three key significant issues, citizens' rights, the financial settlement, and Irish-specific issues, to allow negotiations to proceed to the next phase, will now be postponed until December, because we don't believe that sufficient progress has been made. In my contacts with European presidents and prime ministers, I have to say I've received considerable support and understanding for the particular challenges that we face on this island. From Berlin to Brussels to Bucharest, they understand that Northern Ireland is unique, that the peace is young, that the peace is still fragile, and they're willing to make exceptions for Northern Ireland, exceptions that wouldn't be made for others. And while I continue to make the strongest possible case for Northern Ireland, there is no substitute for a Northern Ireland executive speaking directly for the people of Northern Ireland as your democratically elected voice. I do the best that I can for Northern Ireland, but I'm weakened by the fact that my mandate doesn't come from here. And the best way to secure a unique solution and a favourable outcome for Northern Ireland and a sensible Brexit is to actually ask for it. There is huge goodwill for Northern Ireland right across Europe. Everyone recognises that what has been achieved in the past few decades can't be lost. So there is a willingness to change the rules and create a flexible solution, a unique solution for Northern Ireland, one that won't be on offer for the rest of the UK or even the Republic of Ireland. And standing only 4 miles from the border, I know the importance of maintaining free movement of people, goods and services on the island. Free border crossings between Donegal and Derry alone account for almost 60% of the 95,000 daily crossings between north and south. And that just represents the day-to-day reality of cross-border workers, students, others who cross from Donegal to Derry and back again every single day. We've been unequivocal in our position that Brexit should not give rise to any physical manifestation of a border on this island. And I know the concern about a border extends far beyond the impact on trade and balance sheets, important though all those things are. It's also the emotional impact on communities, north and south, who've become increasingly intertwined over the past 20 years. There is understandably heightened concern among communities who are worried about how their rights will be protected, including rights arising from citizens in Northern Ireland retaining their EU citizenship after Brexit. And above all, there's a concern that the restoration or reintroduction of a border will be an enormous step backwards, a step in the wrong direction in terms of peace and stability, and also the new prosperity which has underpinned this.